knowledge, and that's not a problem. The problem is we, these days, lack a perception of the things in themselves, you know, before we describe them. We lack perception of things in what they are inherently. So in today's world, we are increasingly cutting ourselves off from that understanding and that experience. It's pretty easy to recognize and describe the various objects that we admire or that we desire, and also we recognize things that we don't like. But this is knowledge and feelings about things. But knowledge by itself is not life. Knowledge alone is simply like a picture of something. So these days, less and less, we experience the true nature of things. And more, we are learning to relate to only to what is useful or what brings us pleasure. This is the modern world. And that creates a loss of spirit. And a loss of spirit is a great calamity for humans, because it doesn't enable us to see the beauty of things beyond their appearances. Here is a story that I found in a book a long time ago. Story out of Africa. There was a man who was one of the very first people of the earth. And he was a farmer and a herder, and he had a wonderful herd of cattle. They had coats, white and black coats, that were very fine and very stippled. And the man dearly loved his cattle. He took care of them as a parent would take care of a child. And he always took them to the best grazing grounds in the veld where he lived. And he protected them from the wild animals. And he took them home in the evening, and he watched them chew their meal. And he thought, tomorrow I will have a great deal of milk. But one morning, he found that their udders were empty. And he had expected to find them full of milk. So his first thought was he needs to change their grazing ground so that they can have the proper food. So the next day he took them to a place where he thought the grass was better for them. He brought them home that evening, and he thought, tomorrow for sure I will have the best milk I ever had. But again in the morning, his herds, their udders were empty. So again he changed their grazing ground, but again the udders were empty. So he got suspicious, and he decided to keep a watch on them at night. And that night at midnight, he was amazed to see a rope coming down from the stars. And down this cord, hand over hand, gently and carefully, came a group of young women, of the people of the sky. And he thought they were very beautiful, and they were gay, and they laughed softly to themselves. as they went into his corral and took the milk from his cattle. So he jumped up from his hiding place to catch them. They scattered and they fled back up to the sky. But he caught one of them, the most beautiful of all, and he held her back. Later, he made her his wife. And from then on, he had no more trouble from the people of the sky. Every day, his new wife went to work in the fields while he stayed back and tended his cattle. They were happy. They were a happy couple and they prospered. But he had one worry on his mind. When he caught his wife, she had a basket with her. She begged him that on no account was he to ever lift the lid and look inside the basket. If he did, she said, a great disaster might overtake them both. He promised. But after many months, he forgot his promise. And one day, when he was alone, he went into his wife's hut, saw the basket in the corner in the shadows. He lifted the lid and he looked inside and he burst out laughing. Later, when his wife came home, she immediately knew what happened. Looking at him with tears in her eyes, she said, "You've looked in the basket." He admitted it with a laugh. And he said, "You silly woman, why have you made such a mystery of this basket? There is nothing in it at all." But as he spoke, she suddenly turned her back on him, walked into the sunset, and was never seen on earth again. Most people in today's world cannot understand this story. They cannot feel its essence. Because right away when they hear it, they start to think about its meaning. Oh, what does this story mean? But the understanding of this story can only come when we perceive the meaning before we start to think about the story. The people who tell this story, they explain to foreigners and tourists and visitors like us that the reason his wife went away was not because he broke his promise. It's because he saw an empty basket. In other words, she went away because he could not see the beautiful things she had brought from the sky for them. So he just laughed. So this story is from a very old culture. It's not a very sophisticated culture. Yet, in so many ways, it is a story of the modern world. We are not happy. More and more, we are not happy with what we have, with what we have been given, what gifts that have been brought to us, gifts that we fail to see. We lift the lids of our own baskets and we see them empty. And we are always trying to fill them with tangible things. So our grasping mind and our discriminating mind prevents us from seeing the full measure of what we have been given. And we become separated from our essential nature, separated from what brings us joy. And we wind up feeling unsatisfied, unfulfilled, and alone. The wonderful thing about Buddhism is that it understands this spiritual calamity. So it emphasizes to us Don't miss anything. See things as they truly are, beyond their appearances. Don't see them only subjectively or objectively, but see into the true nature of everything. In our practice, in our zazen, we don't look at anything. We don't think of anything. We try not to think of anything. We practice. Our practice is to see with eyes of non-discrimination. When we practice completely, we are actually seeing with perfect understanding, even though we are not looking at anything. In our everyday life, of course, we have to see, we have to look and see with our eyes, we have to think, we have to act, we have to listen. But we need to do these activities completely, without emotion and without distortion, without the limitations of our analytical mind, our dualistic mind. So when we know the point of our practice, we will no longer rely on only our thinking mind for understanding. And we will no longer rely only on the naked eye for seeing. We will learn to put our trust in a deeper, more subtle way of seeing and understanding. When you sit without dualistic thinking or discrimination, then you yourself are without limitation and can see, even when it would appear that there's nothing there. Then your practice will include everything, and you will know how to really see things. And you will help yourself, and you will help others. So the point of our practice is to, moment by moment, resume what we call our fundamental activity, which is the foundation of all activity. And we will learn to base every one of our activities on that foundation, on that foundational activity. So to practice in that way, to resume our fundamental activity, we need to have the attitude of a bodhisattva, to have a bodhisattva mind. The mind that is oriented outward towards others, not towards itself. The mind that cares about seeing and understanding things and people in a complete way. Without overlaying our own feelings and our own beliefs, which we carry around and that we feel are embedded. The other day, I was home, walking barefoot around the house. And my foot, my heel, stepped on something that was on the carpet. Something was embedded in the carpet. Something very hard. Something very hard and dried and stuck. I thought maybe it came from the cat. I don't know. But I couldn't just pull it out. Stuck. I would have liked to just pull it out, but I was afraid that would make a hole. So I just put some water on it, and then came back and put some more on it, and little by little I let it become wet, and I let the wetness penetrate this, whatever it was, to soften it. And then I was able, when it got soft, I was able to remove this old, dead thing, whatever it was. And it was an illustration of how we need to let our mind walk barefoot in life so we can feel life's bumps as well as feel its sacredness and its gifts. If we don't walk barefoot, we will not feel the gifts of life. This is the attitude of our practice. Take off the protection and feel. This is the only way we can come to understand the true nature of things and understand the best way to relate to things and to people. And this is not about simply solving problems, but it's how we need to relate to everything in all of our activities. And without this attitude of willing to take off our shoes, our mind shoes, without this attitude, we will create unnecessary problems. When our mind is always covered by shoes, we cannot feel our life. So even though we live in a very sophisticated and modern culture, we should be careful not to lose ourselves. Not to lose each fresh experience, moment after moment. We have to be careful not to be caught by our small mind and a small way of seeing. We have to be careful of not looking at things too quickly and saying, oh, there's nothing there. Nothing there that interests me. We have to be careful of that. We need to know, we need to learn, we need to relearn. We need to relearn the fresh vitality within ourselves. And that's where we find our fundamental creative activity. Does anyone have a question?
That's what does one see when you see things as they really are?
I don't know. Yes, please.
Thank you for your talk, Les. I can find myself living in my head at times, living analytically, as you talked about. So that part of your discussion resonates for me. The other dynamic that happens for me is when you say to take off your mind shoes, sometimes that protection is there because of fear. And so I was wondering what your thoughts were on how to move past that fear-based protective behavior.
Resolve. The starting point for getting past fear is our resolve. To live authentically. To discover the truth of things. If that resolve inspires us sufficiently, it will enable us to set aside fear and move ahead. But unless we are inspired, unless we have the determination to do the work, to make these discoveries, we are always at risk of being fearful to move ahead because we don't know where we're going. Our determination will provide us a direction. And that will get us beyond fear. Thank you. Yes, please.
Thank you for the story. I thought the story was really very interesting because it was not that he broke his word, but he couldn't see. That contrast was really quite different. I mean, I can't find the right word, but it was very illustrative because I think a lot of us, we think that we should keep our word. It's a very egoistic thing. And we think that's the best thing you can do, but sometimes we don't see things. I found that part really, the story made it very clear, I thought. The other thing was you mentioned that this is a creative process. Could you explain a little bit more why do you say that this is a creative process?
Well, as we continue our practice, our mindful practice that has no goal. It gives us the opportunity to discover many things that we had not been aware of. And as we continue to make these small discoveries or sometimes big discoveries, it feels like we are creating something new. Actually, we are not. The reality has always been there. But we are discovering its shape and its outline, and it's as if we are creating it. And, of course, this is very encouraging. Of course, the problem is we have to be careful of becoming proud that we've created something. We haven't created anything. The reality has always been there, just that our effort is helping us see more clearly. So it feels creative. Thank you. Yes.
I loved the analogy of the barefoot mind. And I wonder what can we do to encourage other people to take their shoes off, maybe with us?
What can we do to encourage others to take their shoes off? Best thing to do is to be a good friend. And don't worry about trying to change anybody. Just be a good friend and be firm in your own practice and trust. I think that's the best way. This morning in Zazen, this question came up for me this morning in Zazen, when about halfway through the meditation period, some fairly new person got up and left. So the choice is to say, you could say, don't leave, or you should stay, or simply say nothing. If we give in to the temptation to say, don't go, we're actually saying, you need a lot of help, and I'm going to give it to you. But if we just remain silent and let them follow their own feelings, we are, even though we are doing nothing obvious, we are actually doing something very important. We are showing our trust in them, in him. So this man left and nobody moved. Nobody made an effort to stop him or to, you know, encourage him to stay. People simply let him do what he felt he should do. And maybe he didn't recognize it this morning, but maybe someday he will recognize that everybody trusted him by remaining silent. So sometimes doing nothing overtly is the best way to help people. Thank you.
I have a question.
Oh, yes, please.
What about encouraging them to come back?
Just by continuing our practice here and continuing to be open and friendly and keeping this place as an inviting place, this is the best encouragement. We may feel that this looks indifferent, that we are not verbally encouraging people to come back, and it seems like we don't care, not interested. But we are not recruiting. And if people are touched and can relate to what they find here in terms of everybody in this place, they come back. And for some reason, if they cannot, well, their life has taken them somewhere. And we just trust that they are continually on their own journey, making their own discoveries. So if you come here for morning zazen sometime and you realize there's nobody here but me, not a problem. It's not numbers. The world is continuing to unfold all around us. And our job is not to be carried away, but to come back to our fundamental activity. And by demonstrating that, maybe somebody will notice. That's I think, the best way. Thank you. Yes, Richard.
I was also struck by the idea of mind shoes. For me, I think, you know, listening to the radio, especially listening to the news or music or reading news on my iPhone, it can become kind of compulsive. Like, it sounds so important and it's pretty dark. And if I don't listen, then I feel like I'm out of the loop. It could be just too much activity or reading or but especially the radio for me. So sometimes I just turn it off. Like today I didn't listen at all, I just worked, and that silence allows me to have some inner silence. Anyway, as far as being barefoot, metaphorically, like, it reminded me. I had a friend years ago, a long time ago. He was a drummer, and he was a very calm guy. Very quiet, and he was very fussy about putting things on the dresser. Like, he was very like a neatnik, and I don't know what happened to him. I haven't seen him in years, but that seemed kind of inspirational to me. I try to do that myself, try to act with intention and do things slowly, and that's calming. That's usually calming for me. So my question is, am I understanding you right as far as this analogy of mind shoes and walking barefoot?
Relating to neatness?
Well, relating to like allowing some silence.
And also,
like doing things very deliberately and
yes.
Carefully.
Yes, of course. Yes. We want to give ourselves as much opportunity as we can to feel things. And not to have a barrier between ourselves and other people, a barrier between us and our world, and or a barrier between the things of our everyday life. We want to be able to feel what's going on. In other words, we can only know the gifts we are given if we can feel their essence. And of course, if we walk barefoot, we are more mindful to take care we don't unintentionally step on something harmful. The growing interest these days in mindfulness and in awareness is about learning how to take off our mind shoes. And it's so difficult in our culture these days because we maybe spend an hour in meditation, in a meditation hall or in a meditation room. Then we have to get up and go out and put on our shoes. It's necessary. We have to wear some shoes in our everyday life, but we should be ready to take off our mind shoes. Thank you. Yes, Umar.
Last, two nights ago, there was a documentary on PBS, and it was about people who live near Haleakala in Hawaii, and they're talking about how silence has affected their life. It was very quiet. There was a doctor who went bicycling up to Haleakala, and he would sit there and contemplate nothing else but silence. All he wanted to do was listen to the silence. There's a writer who started talking, and she said an interesting thing, and this is what brought things home for me, was she said that there's a point in during the day which is right before the night ends and the sunlight comes out. That is a point where if you sit quietly and you listen, It's stillness, which will lead you into silence, and that silence is where everything begins. And from there, they went to talking to a musician who was playing a flute, and he had practiced and learned from Miles Davis. And he said, yeah, Dizzy Gillespie was a great technician, but one thing that Miles Davis taught him was it's not the notes, it's the silence between the notes that makes you actually listen to the notes. And he said, this is where people don't understand. People think that if you're constantly busy and you constantly keep things in your environment which are noise, you'll be able to create. And he said, creation actually comes out of the silence. And I was thinking, this is interesting. This is what we do in Zazen every day. In the morning, we come and sit and be with stillness so that we can begin our life out of silence. It was very beautiful. Just wanted to share it.
Good, thank you. Yes, please.
So I noticed that when things are not going well in my life, I am more motivated to practice Buddhism. And I realize that's because I think that Buddhism is just another shiny object, you know, that I have expectations for, that it will make me happy. So my question is, how do you give up those expectations and not have any goals when you practice? How do you just practice?
Two things, trust and patience. If you feel that Buddhism is like a door that can be opened for you so that you can reveal a wider world, if you feel that about Buddhism, then you have to put your trust in it and in your practice. Just trust and have no expectations. And as you continue that, sometimes you will become impatient. It's natural. So you have to learn to not be pulled away by the impatience and just continue. Trust, and trust in yourself, trust in the practice, and remain patient. And don't set a schedule. Thank you. Yes, Lee.
Thank you, Les. Earlier today, Umar and I were talking about people who are always putting up things on social media to make themselves look more interesting. And, you know, and this story, I thank you for this story that you told, because it just showed that the man's mistake was to not know the gifts that were inside this woman who came to him from the sky. And we so often overlook the real gifts that people have in who are in our lives. And they don't have to try too hard and, you know, make videos of themselves or, you know, post selfies and stuff like that. There's this value that and these gifts that everyone has. So it kind of, it's a wonderful reminder, you know, to look inside and see your own gifts and also the gifts that other people bring, even people who you may not know very well, but you might see that there's that little spark in them that shows that there's something, there's depth and something that you should explore. So thank you very much.
Thank you.